Rosina Ampa continues with a lecture here at Holden Village on June 10th, 1997. And that session is called What Constitutes a Community? So let's join Sister Rosina.
An Episcopal religious community in the United States. Yesterday, we struggled with the word community. When we use the word community, what it meant. And we all came out with different interpretations. And so we had a good time together searching and struggling with the word so that we will all understand it better. Today, we are going to talk about what constitutes community. When we talk about community, what makes it a community? Why do you call it a community? Because you may not use the same word for something else, but then you will say, oh, this is a community, or this is my community. What constitutes a community? This is what we all are going to find out and struggle with it today. And so I will open it up for people to, as we did yesterday, to express for them what makes it a community. What constitutes a community for them? So it's open now if you want to say what you think or what constitutes a community for you.
I think the feeling of the word community gives me a warmer feeling than this is my neighborhood.
This is your neighborhood. But what makes it a neighborhood?
People that you aren't real close with, mm-hmm. have personal ties to, mm-hmm. People down the street. Mm-hmm. Where a community is closer neighbors that you watch their house and you mow your lawns together and have a closer rapport with.
Okay.
Look
at the word you use. Yesterday I said sometimes we use word interchangeably. Mm-hmm. You use the word neighborhood, neighbors that you can. You see, you are dealing with community. Don't confuse those two words. And that's why I'm trying to find out mm-hmm. what constitutes a community for you. Mm-hmm. Is the next door a community? Think.
Yeah.
So when you say, this is my community, what are you really saying? Okay. Anybody else? This is all of us. We are just getting in together.
Well, as in the illustration of the neighborhood, it's more than just a shared experience of an existence, of a place, you know. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than that.
Okay.
There's some values that you share, and I think uh-huh. there's some other things that uh-huh. that are a part of that.
Okay.
We'll think about those a little longer.
Sure, okay, that's fine. As we are all doing this, as we go along, what else? I want everybody to be able to contribute to this because we all use the word community. This is my community. This is a community for me. What makes it a community?
Doesn't it imply connection?
Okay, I mean, speak it out.
Okay.
Say what it means to you.
To me, it implies connection, uh-huh. and I can be a part of several communities at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because one could be, for me, a faith community. One could mm-hmm. be a a work community, and that's taking the wholeness out of my life. But I feel I belong to several communities. I'm connected in ways.
Okay, so when you use the word community, you are talking of a segment of different bodies that you are related to. Is that what you are talking now?
Yes, but we create a whole.
Okay, but the segment, does the segment become a whole for you? You have a segment of a working body community. You have a segment of a church community. And you may have another segment here and there. How many communities do you have?
I think many in her definition, I like the connected to something. We have something in common, whether it's our history, those of us who go to the same, who went to the same school have, we're in that community. We all have the connection of the whole in the community, or as she said, the work community. We have something, whether it's our history or our religious faith or our same employer or same field of work. We have lots of communities, and it depends how you define them. Northern European ancestry community for some people, many communities.
Okay, so in your definition, community is larger because now you've moved to your ancestral community in Europe. You have a history together. So what I'm actually driving at is our theme is taken out of here. We are no longer strangers. And that's taken from Ephesians 2:19 reading to the 23rd verse. And it talks that God is building us into a holy temple. And the theme is we are no longer strangers. We are all one community. And so that's what we are struggling with the word to find out. What do we mean when we say community? Is the community the next door person? Is the neighborhood that I live? And now you see he's moving further. That there is more to community than just the next one here. You have a community that you share historical events with or history. So they may be far removed, but because you share history with. Now let me come back to a place where we can move out again. We call ourselves Christians because of what? Because of what?
Faith.
Why are we Christians?
Faith in Christ, Jesus, Savior.
Because of Christ. Christ did something 2,000 years ago. And this 2,000 years, it hasn't been in a vacuum. We have had people who have been moving until it's our turn here. And when we move on, there will be more to follow. So all these people are part of the community. So we use the word communion of saints. They are all part of the community. When you think of community, it's bigger than just defining the little environment where you live. And I think what has happened to us as a people is that we have defined community in a very small little dot in our world that sometimes we get stuck there. And when you start to move and start thinking globally, you will realize that the community is not just what you see here. There is more to it. And so when I ask what constitutes a community, I'm asking broader than just somebody who babysits for you when you are away. Am I making sense? So think again.
Well, I've been thinking for the last 12 or 13 years we've come to Holden in the summer for anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks every year. And there's been times I've wondered why I feel closer to some of the people I only see maybe every 2 or 3 years here, because you don't meet the same people every time. And I almost started feeling bad about it. I thought, well, maybe I have problems with intimacy, that I don't feel as close to some of the people in my own town. Mm-hmm. And then there, I can't remember what Bible verse we were reading, but it was about encouragement. Mm-hmm. And it was suddenly I realized how important it was to hear from other people's experience the way they were applying their faith where they were. And I think that sometimes finding that commonness in the deepest, in your faith, but in a different situation is so encouraging, because it sort of makes you think, well, if that comes up in my life, then maybe that's how I could deal with that. And the same thing internationally, when I've gone to other countries and meet Christians who are dealing with something that maybe would be frightening to me, to see that their faith carries them through it. But it was sort of a light on to suddenly realize that there was a closeness there, even with short contacts, of hearing how those people were using their faith in a different area. It was encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good, thank you. That's what, you see, this is what is so important, I think, when we gather. We gather from all over the universe. And I'm glad we are sitting at a place where you see the center. So you see the unbrokenness of what it is here. And the middle also is unbroken. Okay, let's, and I put, I'm not a good artist, but there it is, you see. When, let's pretend God is in the center, holding the universe together. The further we move, the further away we are from God. The closer we come to the center, that is God. And I think what we've done is we have sort of isolate ourselves into individual little circles, even in the corner where we are, to a point that when you think of community, sometimes you think even of just your family. It's just a different word we use. Instead of thinking in global terms or even citywide, we just think about my little corner. So when something else is happening, since it's not on my doorstep, it doesn't matter. But it affects you one way or another. Whatever decision somebody makes further away is going to affect you. Maybe not directly, but indirectly is going to affect you. And that's why it's so important that sometimes we have to say, what do I mean when I say community? Am I thinking of just this little space, or am I thinking of the whole city, or am I actually looking into the whole world? Because the people that have brought us up to where we are may have been all over the place. They travel, they move around. So that somebody sitting maybe in England may relate to you here than you ever will believe it. So when something has happened there and you think it's not affecting me, so I'm not going to do anything about it, you are hurting yourself. Community encompasses all of us, including creation. Take, for example, if you destroy the forest around you, what happens? Now talk.
Lots of erosion of the land.
Okay. What else?
Animals leave.
Okay.
Or die.
Okay, what else?
The weather changes.
Okay. What else?
The rivers start to dry up.
Okay. So in the end, who suffers?
Everyone.
We do.
Human beings, because we breathe in and we breathe out, we receive from the plants and the animals, and they get from us. So our lives depends upon each other. And there is a beautiful closing prayer in the Episcopal book that our lives depend upon each other's toil. So if something is happening here, for example, I think I can, holding is a community, because the people here, as our brother said, have a purpose. The gifts are not the same, but what they are doing, the aim is the same. Some have gifts in music, some have gifts in engineering. Everyone has a different gift. Some are cooks, but when they come together, the idea is to create what? What are they trying to create?
Community.
They are trying to create harmony, peace, justice for all. That's what makes it a community. Even though they are very diverse, the interests that have gathered them here, the interests are the same. It's not different. And so when, before you even board a car or whatever to come here, what do you have in mind? I mean, individually, when you are coming, what do you have in mind? Think now. What do you have in mind when you decide to come here?
Renewal.
Thank you. You want to come to refresh yourself. You want to come to receive. You want to come to take some rest. Why can't you do it where you are?
There's too much in the outside world coming in.
And it's not even the same.
No.
Because you have conflicting issues, and one thing we are afraid of as human beings is to deal with conflict. I'd rather go and lock myself in my room and be safe than to come out and be a part of what is happening, whether to make it better or even sometimes to make it worse, but to help deal with it. I would rather disappear. But here, it's very different. It gives you what? Energy. It gives you energy you want to be a part of. You really want to charge in there and give the little help that you can, because it does something for you. And I believe that's what God created us, to live in a community, to feel, to experience. And it started breaking down with two brothers having misunderstanding. And who were the brothers?
Cain
and Abel. Thank you. It started with our two brothers, because they couldn't talk out the problem. And so he lured the other one and killed him. And we started from there, living that way. But God created us to live in harmony and to be with each other and to help each other. And I believe that's what Christ came into our history again to help us to understand that we can still live together. We can come back to the community that we have destroyed and broken down. And what has happened again? We have divided ourselves into little groups again. I'm a Lutheran, don't talk to me, okay? I'm Episcopalian, I don't have to be with you. I'm Roman Catholic, you all don't have faith. I'm a Baptist, I have God, I've been saved. You don't understand God. What are we doing again? Tearing it apart. Putting ourselves in little boxes. So what actually makes community is to be able to use our differences in a positive way, to dialogue instead of running from problems, to be able to say, you know, this wasn't right, but it's okay. I can handle it, I'm matured enough, I'm tough enough. I'm not egg that I will, you know, break and not be able to put together. Let's live together and deal with this situation. We rather run away from it and not try to deal with it. So when you think of community, really, you are thinking of people who will be able to live together in harmony with some understanding, that will be able to share the same opinions and ideas. They may disagree to agree, but they will be able to live together. I happen to come from a culture that uses a lot of proverbs and a lot of wise sayings. And when I was growing up, sometimes my parents would say to me, the tongue and the teeth live under the same roof. They bite, but they don't quit company. Have you ever chewed something that your tongue has gotten in the way? And it goes, and then you stop for a minute. It's so painful. You have to stop chewing for a while. And sometimes you will look and you really get a cut. But does the teeth move away? Does the tongue quit? They live so they can help each other to grow. But as human beings, we really haven't learned how to do that. So in order to form a community, and I'm going to use a community now in smaller terms so that we can move it out. I'm going to use my own community, the religious community. As religious sisters, we live together, but we are from very diverse backgrounds. I'm from Ghana, West Africa. There are three of us. For about 12 years, I was alone in the community. Then we have about three Canadians. And in the United States, we have from different parts of the United States. So you can imagine when we come together to make a decision. You have all these women together trying to do the same thing, but everyone is coming from a different point of view. And you really want a riot, you put women together for that. You get it. Because everybody's opinion is viable. It's important too. But what we've come to learn over the years as we live together is we can agree to disagree. We come to consensus and we work together. Sometimes it's not pleasant, but we don't have to quit. We live together. But working in a working situation, the difference between that kind of community is if I have disagreement with you, after 5 o'clock, I go home. I don't have to look at you. If even I don't want to look at you, I can go to my office and shut the door. If you do something I don't like, I may quit the club. I'm not coming back. But do you have any choice when you really are in community? You don't. And so when we think of community, we really are not in community. We pick our bags every time we feel uncomfortable about something and move on, instead of working together for the good of all of us and to really create the community. I would rather go somewhere else rather than struggle to create it. And sometimes I will say to people, you know, the hard thing is I live with my sisters every day. I have to stare them in the face every morning. I have to stare them every afternoon. I have to stare them at breakfast table, lunch table, supper table, pray with them 4 times a day until I'm ready to go to bed. Even when I'm ready to go to bed, they want something, I still have to sit there and stare at them. I live with them 24 hours a day. I have nowhere else to go. So, unless I decide enough is enough, I quit, and then I will move out of community. I can move out of community. But since I'm in there, my work is to make it in a way, or create it in a way where I'll feel comfortable living in it. As I said, sometimes it's not pleasant. It's like your teeth biting your tongue. And you get a scar, but you move on with it. Am I making myself clear about community? Okay, now, with all this interpretation, how do you see yourself in a community? Now talk. We all live in a community, right? We live in communities, all of us. How do you see yourself in your community?
I see myself, like what you said, avoiding conflict, because to me conflict is bad. Mm-hmm. And so I would rather leave the room than get involved with conflict.
Okay, so you see yourself always in community, trying to avoid what may create a conflict.
Right.
And so do you have a community?
In your definition, no, I don't.
Okay, but in your own definition, what community was, you were really in community.
Yeah, I'm trying to work in harmony with people, but if there was conflict, I felt very uncomfortable and disappeared.
Okay, who else? I mean, we all live in community. How do you see yourself in community? Are you one of those people who really would give everything and all energy to create a community? Or are you part of the people who would rather give up community and be alone rather than work at it? If it's hard.
I think I get my toe stepped on a lot and I have to take my foot out of my mouth a lot.
Okay.
I guess that's how I describe.
That's how
myself.
you describe mm-hmm. yourself. But at least you try hard.
But yeah, sometimes conflicts are hard, but mm-hmm. my toes have to be stepped on pretty hard to really voice my opinions mm-hmm. if they're mm-hmm. not the same as other people's. Try to work together, but...
You would rather not deal with it.
Yeah.
If it's
possible, yeah, just go with the flow. But when the feet get stepped on too hard, then you step in.
Okay. Who else? We are many here. Sister, how do you see yourself in community?
After having lived here for a year, there's mm-hmm. times where I think that it's great that in the wintertime we're so isolated that we have to mm-hmm. face each other and deal with each other.
Uh-huh.
I'm also always conscious that, but I'm here until August.
Mm-hmm.
that this particular, my experience with this particular community is at one sense a lifelong connection, and in another sense, I'm out of here on August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And so my ability to swallow a uncomfortable situation with a fellow community member is still limited.
Okay.
I can swallow it until August 15th when we're not living together.
Okay, so you are sort of doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not here for the rest of my life. So I'll just put up with whatever. And then when my time comes, I'll just move on. Mm-hmm. You see, that's what really is very hard. And we all do it. I mean, one way or another, we all do it. That I would rather not say it. I would rather not rock the boat. Please rock it and turn it over. Sometimes it's good to really turn the boat over and start it all again. It's really hard. And I'm coming back to the Bible. I'm just talking my way rather back into the Bible. Yesterday I started from the Bible. This time I'm just coming back, and then we will look at some of the things Jesus has to do. And now Jesus left it with us. And if you and I are going to be able to continue and live in community, we will have to learn some of the skills in really dealing with conflicts. Every conflict is unpleasant, but sometimes when you stay to talk it through, what comes out is really good. You have rather a good, trusting relationship than trying to run away from the conflict. And another example, when I first came into this culture, in my culture, you've been taught that to tell the truth is the best thing you do. No matter how hard it is, tell the truth. I came here and I thought that it functions the same way in American society. And so there I was sitting there talking, and I was talking about one particular sister. She's a very smallish kind of person, but very, very good and big heart. I mean, big-hearted woman. And so I was sitting there saying, oh, I love Catherine. She's just a wonderful, wonderful human being. She really is very simple. And another word I learned here is the word simple. And one sister turned and looked at me and she said, what do you mean she is simple? And I said, she's easy to talk to. She's easy to understand. She will, you know, we really are able to talk a lot about a lot of things. And then she said, you know, simple means somebody who is not altogether stupid or something like that. And I said, you are English people. I speak another language. That's the, when your teacher says to you, simplify your work, does the teacher say, stupid your work? I said, that's not an English interpretation of the word simple. So when they said Mary was simple, does that mean Mary was stupid? I said, what kind of English do you use here? I was sort of, you know, learning and finding my way. And so the sister turns to me and says, if so, am I simple? And I looked straight at her and I said, no, you are difficult. But I will live with you 1,000 years. I'll never be angry because I know that's who you are. And I didn't even know. She was so quiet. And she sort of, you know, left for a while. And about 2 days later, she said to me, you hurt me terribly. And I said, I did what? What did I do? She said, when I asked you, am I, you know, simple, what did you say? I said, but you asked me a question. Didn't you want to hear the truth? I said, you want me to answer the question? Am I someone? I said, no, you are not. And that's the truth. But I said, I will live with you 100 years. I will never be offended because I know that's who you are. And she said, yeah, you hurt me. I know I'm a difficult person, but nobody has ever, ever said that to me right in my face as you did. And so I said, well, if you don't want to know the truth, don't ask me. Because if you ask me, I'm going to tell you the truth. And that's where, you know, cultural conflict started to come in. But what it did, after about 2 weeks, she came back to me and said, you know, don't change. From now on, I'm going to trust you. And every time I ask you a question, I want to hear the truth. She left the community, but we've still been bosom friends. She now lives in Seattle. She works and teaches at Jesuit School. But we are still friends. When I was in Seattle, we were just chatting. I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I have to catch, you know, they have to pick me up early to come here. And we were chatting away like we've never separated. But that's how the friendship and the relationship started. But you see, if that had not happened, maybe we would never have come to that clear understanding of who each person is, and then be able to come together. And sometimes, you know, not all conflicts lead to bad ending. Do you not have some experiences that an encounter has turned out very good? I mean, can you share some of what you have experienced in your own experiences that turn out to be good?
I guess I learned the hard way in a work situation where I was working with someone where we were a team and we were a very different style of working, and I was maybe inexperienced enough not to directly confront that and to maybe say, well, we're going to have to work together better and voice my discomfort. I thought because I was sort of the lead person that I should accept whatever happened. And I eventually left the situation, not totally because that person was difficult, but partly. Mm-hmm. Well, within 2 years, someone else had to confront that issue. Mm-hmm. And so since that, I've been more apt to say it's better to be honest. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that the worrying about doing the honest statement mm-hmm. is much worse than doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, that the worrying ahead of time is much worse than, especially if you sit down and do it in a loving way mm-hmm. and say, you know, this is the problem that is there. And I found that it's much harder to worry about it and to mm-hmm. think of it than to go into it, because I think that most of the time people sense when there's a problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if you're honestly concerned at the same time, if you're doing it out of love, but it is, it's hard because the worrying about it is much harder than the doing it.
Anybody else? You haven't spoken yet. What's your experience? I believe you've lived long enough to encounter these things. You can't think of anything right now? Or just shy to share it?
I haven't thought of it.
Okay, what about you?
Well, I think of, when I think of community, I think of my neighbors mm-hmm. that are living around me. Mm-hmm. And right now, one neighbor is checking my yard and watering, and then she leaves while I help her. Mm-hmm. And the little boy's mowing our lawn, and we live in a wonderful neighborhood where we enjoy each other mm-hmm. and visit across the street, and and I feel very thankful. And I also spend a lot of time calling people. I'm on the Friendship Committee of the church. And I every Sunday morning, I stand at the door when people come in, mm-hmm. and I greet them. And then when the new people that have not been in our church before, I call them, mm-hmm. visit with them, and welcome them back. And they always, and now as time goes on, I see many smiling faces because they appreciate the fact that I welcome them and so forth. So that gives me a lot of good feelings.
Okay, but is it only the church people and the people around you?
No.
It's more other people. Do you have an area where sometimes the neighbors will come together and have some things together?
No, we haven't really all got together at the same time. I would like to do that sometime.
Okay. What about you?
Well, thinking about community, I think about my most recent experience, I led a discussion in our congregation about the Lutheran ecumenical agreements, mm-hmm. for example, with the Episcopalian.
With us.
Yes. And one of the things that, because this centers on the whole idea of Christian mm-hmm. community on a worldwide basis, mm-hmm. one of the things that hit me right between the eyes was a reaction out of the congregation, which was really fearful.
Right.
And I found right away that fear was an enemy of community.
Yeah.
And I really
and
did.
That don't work.
Mm-hmm. I really didn't. I really didn't have a sense of it. Immediately, it just came on me afterwards. Why are we, you know, why do we argue about these things? Why are we concerned? Out of curiosity, we had a couple of folks in our little discussion group. There were sometimes as many as, 15 or 20?
Right.
And sometimes a few fewer. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of folks that were very, very concerned mm-hmm. about bishops, interestingly enough.
All right.
and all the issues that surround this whole business about bishops, which in the Lutheran Church people are very conscious and very imprinted with the idea of the priesthood of the believers mm-hmm. and the power being in local congregations. Mm-hmm. All of that's very, very close to them. And then I got a call from an Episcopalian friend. We were coordinating activities, and I asked her, I said, after all this was done, I said, you know, what was the concern of the folks in your parish mm-hmm. about this agreement? And she told me it was about the bishops, the Lutheran bishops. And I said, what is this? What is this? What is this that separates us? Yeah. It was fear.
Okay. So when you think of community, because we are not in real community, because we are so much afraid. And fear is also the same thing that keeps you from dialoguing with mm-hmm. people or confront something when you see it, because you are afraid of the result before you even get there.
Right.
So so that's a very important word we have to really look. When you are reacting to something, you know, first of all, catch yourself. Why am I reacting this way? Am I afraid of it? Am I afraid to deal with this or what's happening? And maybe if it's fear, if you move beyond that, maybe you'll be able to sort of move on with it. But we are not in community because we are always afraid of what is going to happen. You know, if I get too close, am I going to get hurt? What about you?
They can't think of it.
Okay, your husband's hands spoke for you. What about you, brother?
Well, I think I'm thinking about what you were saying about the Episcopal dialogue, and I think one of the things that strikes me is sometimes we, in community, we make decisions for others too quickly, rather than getting sincere dialogue going.
Sure.
And we assume that people don't have opinions, and they do have opinions, and that's the danger, I think, of ecumenical dialogue. I'm a pastor, and I really sense what real ecumenism mm-hmm. is.
Ecumenism.
what could happen mm-hmm. with the people in our parishes, not what is declared, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that's where the priesthood of all believers maybe has some effect for us as Lutherans.
Mm-hmm.
So, but speaking for others sometimes, I think, really, when they do have opinions and they ignore the opinions, mm-hmm. it's very detrimental to community.
Yeah,
whether it's in the church, it happens mm-hmm. in the church quite often. It happens mm-hmm. in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it happens in larger communities, so I brought it back smaller to the church again, so we will have something to really deal with. But in the larger society, it's the same thing. And globally, it's the same thing, brother, believe me. I was in Ghana when the first woman bishop was elected in the United States, Barbara Harris. And I was riding in the bishop's car. And I can still see Bishop Yeboah. He sat there and he pounced his hand on the seat and said, "There goes America again. They are always doing this. We are all talking about this. And now look what they've done." They didn't care what we think or what our feelings were. You know, and I all I could do was to sympathize with him. Because now I'm caught in two cities. I'm a Ghanaian, but I live here. I live in a community here. And what happens here affects me. And so there I was, you know, trying to really, you know, defend the American church that sometimes is hard, but if nobody takes a step, we all are going to drown. Mm-hmm. And so this is where, for me, dialogue in community is very important. And when you have community, that's where it happens. But if you don't, then somebody else is going to chew the food and put it in your mouth. And sometimes you don't want it. And that's why you have to be in community to really, I'm coming back to you. What about you, my sister? Next? Yeah? Mrs.
Oh, I have a hard time being, if I don't feel trust. I think trust is a
okay.
really important part.
Another word, in community, you have to be able to trust
right.
the people you are with. Okay, you had your hand up and my hand is so I will go ahead and say what you
think. Yeah, I was just thinking that, I mean, I've had a lot of different thoughts running through here, but that if you don't have the knowledge of another person or any kind of trust level, which comes in community,
mm-hmm.
then to raise a conflict is much more dangerous and less fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, once you take the step, I mean, as Anne said, you know, you fret about it and worry and then you do it. I mean, what I've found in my community is that when I do that, it's often very bad right at the beginning
mm-hmm.
and always better later.
Yeah.
That's my experience, is that because people are so it's so ingrained in them that it's not good to have conflict,
mm-hmm.
that when they're, you know, confronted with something, even if you're not saying, you did this, but if you say, this is a problem,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is how I see it, what do you think? Mm-hmm. Often it'll be, I don't see a problem, or it's your problem, or that
mm-hmm.
whole kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, you know, farther down the road, like this sister that came to you and said, you know, okay, you're right. But I mean, I think that is the bottom line in the experiences I've had with this. And it's always really scary to me. But I think it's the kind of thing where sometimes a situation becomes unbearable because I'm not able to turn away. And I don't know sometimes if that's a gift or a curse, because I think it's both, but I'm not able to say, well, forget that then. And so I suffer and suffer until I finally bring it out. And then it usually is, after that, exactly, the person will say, you know, okay, now I know that I can trust you. But it often takes a really long time, or a while.
Yeah, it takes a while to really, you know, trust people, but without venturing out, without venture, there's no gain. You really have to, we have to learn to really venture. And there is another thing that is really detrimental to community. It's not somebody who is adamant to refuse defeat. You have to be gracious in accepting something wrong that you've done. And sometimes, you know, we want to fight our way through it. And you really push people away from you. And so there are skills that takes to really be able to live in community. And that's part of sometimes being able to say, I was wrong. Or I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way, but it came out that way. And so there are skills, and we have to learn when we do it little here and try to move further and further, that's when you really include. Because if you want people always agreeing with you, you are not going to have a community. Brother upstairs. Hello. Jay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What do you?
What am I?
With your with your position. I think you know more than any of us here.
You think so?
Tell us. Yeah, tell us.
There are lots of conflicts.
What have you encountered to be beneficial in building community or destroying community?
Well, I don't know if it's extra wisdom or anything, but in terms of the dealing with conflicts, I mean, we all have, in any community, we're going to have conflict. And I think to pretend we don't is not wise. And also, if we have something, again, the common root, the common basis, the common history goal, we have to, if it's a community worth defending, which I guess by definition I think we'd say it is, you have to find a way around those conflicts. And so you give and try give and take, you try compromise, you try other ways to do it. And dialogue, talking with people is certainly the first step always.
Thank you, that's good. You were keeping that to yourself. Hi, brother.
I was going to say what you already mentioned, and that it takes some element of risk. You have to be willing to take a risk, to be honest with people, to let them know who you are, so that you can be in community with people that you know. And if you don't take the risk to let them know you, then you can't be in community. I don't think you can't be in, I guess in the global community, you can't know everyone, but I think there's still a risk.
Yeah, but you always start where you are. Brighten in the corner where you are. And if you do, you see it moves on. But if you don't start, it doesn't go anywhere. So I think it's, you know, it's good too. If people in the neighborhood knows you, people travel, you know. You never know. Sometimes somebody you encountered here, where else you're going to meet them. And sometimes it happens. You go on a trip and then you look at the person and say, is that the same person? And you look again and say, I guess so. And then you walk and say, oh, when did you get here? And you never thought you're going to ever meet that person again. And so that's how sometimes also, you know, the community you know here, you've been, and the person you've been gracious to, you may find yourself in another community where you were totally a stranger, and within 5 minutes you are another community member because somebody else has already been there ahead of you. So taking risks is always good. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I'm sorry, I was taking a nap. I'm kind of dovetailing in on what I think maybe we're talking about, but I don't know that I have, you know, a lot to contribute in this area, except that I think I know I'm one of the conflict avoiders, and I think sometimes for me that it's the inauthenticity that develops with another person that usually drives me to, you know, want to deal with it, because I can't stand that, you know, the artificiality or the phoniness that's going on in the name of trying to be peaceable or whatever. And the other thing I think is I don't think sometimes we have a good framework to deal with conflicts that we avoid it. Once there's some history with dealing with conflict that's been successful and good, I think people have less fear about it. And I think sometimes leaders or any of us could be better at, you know, kind of developing a framework or something that, you know, gives people an experience with it that's positive, so it's not to be feared so much. And I think I'm also not always sure about that place where you get, where you just agree to disagree. Mm-hmm. And when is that sort of okay? I can remember reading some of John Cobb when I was up here at Holden, the guy who's done a lot on Christian and Buddhism dialogue, and says that you really are not entering into dialogue with another person unless you're completely willing to have your own position changed. And I don't think very often we're really there. I mean, I think we very much hold on tight to where we are and say, well, I'm going to go through this process, but I have my own position. Mm-hmm. And I think about that a lot.
Yeah, it may not happen then. The changes may not happen, but believe me, the person will go and think about it. They may stand adamantly with their position, but more or less, if they are human beings, they will think about it. After they leave you, it will come back again, they will think about it. And you may not make any impression on them then, but in the process of growing up, it will make a difference. So, you know, don't give up, really. That's part of really, you know, making community. You don't always hope to win, but you try anyway. That's going to be my goal. But you don't expect that it's always going to be your way. And if we have that, then it will help us to really build community somewhat in a way. Okay, sister. You've already said so.
Well, I've been thinking community happens over and over. It needs to be created continually. And thinking the fear I feel often comes from fear of change. Which all means a loss of some sort, probably, for me. And that recognizing that change is continual, that change involves losses for other people, and that's what's driving a lot of folks' response, is just fear of change, the loss of some piece of the way they like, you know, from as simple as the way they like to do things to just a core issue, you know, you're having to think about it differently.
It's very hard. I think you put your hand on. So we are always, as human beings, we are always afraid of change. It doesn't matter what change. Sometimes even change for good. The devil you know is better than the angel you don't know. And that's it. As you know, as simple as that. You've lived with the devil for a long time, so you know the tricks, you know everything. And so if even an angel comes in, you don't know the angel, so you're going to be afraid to really take the risk. And that's why I said, you know, living in a proverbial kind of culture, I'm always, sometimes, you know, I'll say, and I will remind myself of a proverb, and I'll say, Rosina, look at this again. But as human beings, we are always afraid to take a risk or to even change. And sometimes it's not all that bad. Sometimes the changes are good and it brings growth for us. So we can all take risks as we live in community. Hi, brother.
Hello.
What do you have to give us?
Well, I've wandered off into the conflict issue, but your original question was, where do we see ourselves in
community?
So I'll start there anyway.
Okay.
I see myself as somebody who's easily frustrated in community, because I am somebody who will call for change when it matters. And I found myself creating conflicts that don't always get resolved. And the example that I can speak to is this last academic year I was living with a roommate who we wound up splitting the apartment in half, basically.
All right.
You know, he gets the front, I get the back.
All right.
It just didn't work. So we managed to cohabitate in the same apartment with basically never seeing one another.
Can you pinpoint what frustrates you in a dialogue situation? Like you and your friend.
In that situation, I think we both had mutual respect for one another. However, my roommate didn't seem to have a whole lot of self-respect, so he wound up giving in to me when he shouldn't have. A lot of times, which then he became resentful. So the issue would come back and haunt us.
Okay. So. That's another key issue in community living. Believe me, if you out of not willing to really sometimes fight for your rights, and be able to say, we're going to see this issue through. If even I have to get a third person in this, believe me, you give in and you're going to be as mad as you can be. Because you will go off and think about it and say, why did I do that for? And the result of that is to be revengeful sometimes. Because when the other person is not really on any kind of angry situation, or that's when you take your revenge. And you are just putting in something that needs to have gone away and is still stuck there. And that's why it's important. In living in community, you are rubbing each other like, you know, stones rubbing on another stone. But in the end, they become very smooth. And it's all, it looks like pebbles. You pick them and they are smooth in your hand. But the water rubs them against each other. And that's what sometimes is very hard for us to do. Because we think that when we do that, then the friendship is gone forever. Maybe not. Maybe the person is going to respect you more and say, you know, I can really get angry with this person. But then the person will still be there for me when I need them. And then that's when really the respect begins to grow. And so maybe another time you may just tell the person that, you know, you gave in because you don't want to really deal with this or let us talk through this. So you just gave in easily because you, and see what the other person, or sometimes the frustration may come because you want the person to really get with you on the same level so that you can argue and go on. And they said, enough of this. I'm not doing it. And then you will get frustrated. So there are a lot of skills in community. And sometimes, you know, I do that, and when I do it, I tell the person. I'll tell the sister or whoever I'm in. I said, you know, I'm not becoming a bait for you. I'm not doing it. I'm not giving up because I don't. But I think it's your idea of getting good at this and just making sort of, you know, a little, getting a little energy out of this, and I'm not playing those games, so I'm not doing it. And so the person knows that I know what is going on. But sometimes you don't even know. You will go before you realize what has happened. And being in community, you need to find a way to come back to the person and say, you know, this is what I think happened. How do you see it? It's hard. If you really want to live in community, you have to work at it. It's like anything else. You can't just take for granted that it's going to happen. And I'm going to come back. I think our time is moving. We have brother, we have to hear from you, and then I will come back to some of what Jesus had to do with the community he lived in.
Well, I'm thinking about the community that I belong to. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we do in that community is we meet every Sunday night for a couple of hours mm-hmm. and get together. And I was thinking about how I oftentimes feel reluctant to go there mm-hmm. and what that has to do with conflict. Mm-hmm. I'm not like this gentleman here. I don't know. I don't challenge things mm-hmm. as much, but I'm sitting here thinking that oftentimes I'm very conflicted about things that are going. I feel mm-hmm. conflict in the community. And going there, I think, heightens that for me. It raises, it challenges me with my own weakness or my own mm-hmm. inability to mm-hmm. to make those connections. I'm a patient person, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of my conflicts get resolved over time, mm-hmm. not with the direct confrontation. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that's what I'm musing on right now. I know I'm committed the longer I'm in this community.
Once you don't move out of community because of what has happened, it's fine. Right. If you're going to take that patient kind of way to deal with it, it's fine. But if it aggravates you enough to move out of that community, yeah. it's giving up. And it's different. Sometimes you can take that way. I'm going to wait until you come around. It's like a mother waiting for a child. You can run away, but you don't have anywhere to go. You're going to come back home, you know. I'm not running after you. You're coming back to sleep.
And I think the other thing about it for me, too, is I feel patient with myself. I mean, mm-hmm. I go and I see this person or this person. I think, gosh, I still haven't resolved that. You know, I've kind of forgot about this thing. So then I start working on it again. Mm-hmm. So I think that's some of the hard part about going there for me is it hits me in the face. But it's also a good thing for me because it pulls me back to what's important to me.
Okay, living in community, as I said, it takes skills, it takes sometimes confrontation. Sometimes if you want changes to happen, you have to act. And there are several stories in the Bible that Jesus used when he was alive and in his ministry. And I think several comes to mind, but I want to use what was really a real conflicting issue. And that is the woman with the flow of blood. Number one, Jesus has been called to go to a very important person's house because the daughter was sick. He was on his way going to this place. And in Jewish culture, when you have your period, you don't have to be seen. And my culture followed that too when I was growing up. You have, you know, you have, they call it the women's house. And so you just stay away. And I think, I always say, I think people are afraid of blood. Blood is life. And so they're just afraid of it. They say, don't come. You know, just stay on your own. And this woman, who has been spending all her money, going from different doctors to different doctors, not to be seen in public, got the nerve to venture into public. And not only that, went to the highest rabbi she can find and touch him. Well, she got healed. She got what she wanted. Did Jesus have to make a public scene? Think about it. This is a society that even do not socialize with their wives in public. The men can socialize and be together, but they have their wives when they go to the house. They don't socialize with them in public. Did Jesus have to make a public scene? But Jesus wanted to make a statement. Jesus stopped and said, "Somebody touched me." And Peter said, "Ha, ha, ha, you must be crazy. Everybody's touching you. What do you mean somebody touched me?" Sometimes, you see, this is some of the stories in the Bible. We can take and look at it and really look into our own lives and situation. And Jesus says, "Yeah, Peter, somebody touched me because power has gone out of me. And I know when that power goes out, something profound happens. So somebody touched me." So the woman in fear crawls to this place where she's trying to hide, into the middle of all of them. And you can just see the disgusting faces. People will look at this woman just being there, you know, coming to the public and touching the rabbi. And what Jesus said to the woman? The woman had to make a public confession of why she did what she did. "I've suffered all these 12 years. And when she said that, she was expecting to be scolded. She was expecting something horrible to be said to her. Because everybody's expectation was high, looking at Jesus. And Jesus says, 'My daughter, your faith has healed you. Go your way in peace.'" It turns the whole society upside down. Who is this man? Why is he doing this? Not only on one occasion, another time, the woman caught in adultery. These people grabbed this woman. I always wonder where was the man. But that's my own, you know, my own opinion and thinking. Where was the man who was involved in this? But they dragged this woman again. And they say, and the custom was to stone people caught in adultery, to stone them. And they brought this woman for Jesus to give an opinion. And what did Jesus do? Sits there and writes in the sand with a little finger as though he didn't know what, and he says, "Any of you who has not sinned, cast your first stone." And they all disappeared one by one. And Jesus looks up, and there was a woman alone with himself. And he says, "Has nobody condemned you?" She says, "No." He says, "Neither do I. Go, but don't do that anymore." These are stories you see over and over and over. Look at the culture that Jesus was working against. Look at the culture and the system and everything that has been put in place that this man, do you think, I mean, the crucifixion, looking at it, was very easy. The things Jesus did at that time, in that moment, in that culture. Look at the man who was, you know, has been on this mad for 30 years, 38 years, around the pool, sick. And he says to that man on a Sabbath day, do you want to be healed? Said, well, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. When the angel mess up the pool, somebody goes ahead of me. So take off your mat and walk. And he jumps up and he takes up his mat. You're not supposed to pick up your mat on Sundays. Can you see yourself with the rules around you? What you do and what you don't? And Jesus breaks them all. Says, take your mat and go. And then the man walks and says, who asked you? Said the man, who healed me? I don't even know that man. He just says, take up your mat. So I did. These are some of the things. And sometimes in aggravation, the woman who had a withered arm right in front of the people. He says, is it good to do evil on Sunday or to do bad? And they didn't answer because they didn't know what to say. And so he said, stretch out your hand. He healed the woman. You see, these are some of the things if you are going to be living in community. And especially we call ourselves Christians, followers of Christ. You're going to have to learn to live in a community in a way that you will be able to sometimes scatter and shatter these don'ts and do's. You don't eat with sinners when you were a rabbi. Jesus had wonderful time with them. And they said, look at him, a gluttoner, a wine bibber. He said, John came, he didn't drink. He said he had a demon. And now here I am drinking. And I'm what? So no matter what you do, it's going to do something. Do something that will really create harmony. And we have people living around us, left and right, who are really longing and looking even for somebody to say hello to them. Look into their face and say, how are you today? And we pass by. Just like the priest and the Levite passed around the man on Jericho Road. And we call that community. Jesus asked them, you know, who was it? It's the one that had mercy on this man who was beaten. So now, we dismiss with our dinner time bell to go and do what Jesus wants us to do, to live in community and to care for each other. Thank you.